Welcome to Holden Village. Today, in the fabulous fireside room, today's speaker is Phil Engstrom. And he will be speaking on What's Up There? So let's listen in on Phil.
Now that should be, there should be something at least recognizable in there. You see the Big Dipper? And these two stars at the bottom of the Big Dipper are called the pointer stars, and they point to the North Pole, or Polaris, which is right here. Here again, the Big Dipper, these two the pointer stars. Here the end of the handle of the Little Dipper, Polaris, and if you follow these stars upward and around, you come to the bowl of the Little Dipper. And this is roughly a picture of the so-called circumpolar stars, because they are all close enough to the North Pole so that they're visible throughout the entire year. They never set. They never set. They're always visible to even the night sky. Now, the stars in the heavens are arranged in constellations. We often use the word constellation for a collection of stars like the Big Dipper. That's not exactly correct. A collection of stars that suggests a figure, an animal, dipper, whatever, is properly called an asterism, an asterism. But that asterism is contained within a particular section of the sky, and all the stars that lie in that section are called a constellation. Now this is the same part of the sky with some lines drawn in to show you the figures in the sky. And if you drew in the constellation lines, then you would have a picture like this. So that each of these patterns, here the Big Dipper again, here the Little Dipper, and so on, is contained within a particular boundary. The entire sky is divided into these constellations, so that every star is in some constellation, just as every town, every city is in some state in the United States. In the same way that we divide up the our country, we divide the heavens.
How many constellations are there?
Oh my, let's see. 80 or 100, so I think. Don't really know. I should know that, shouldn't I? This is Ursa Major, the Big Bear, and Ursa Minor, the Little Bear. Anybody know this one? That's Draco the Dragon. And here is Cygnus, the Northern Cross. Here is Cepheus. This is Cassiopeia. This is Lacerta, this is Lynx, this, let's see, this one, what's that one, don't recall here. Anyway, that's the, these are the circumpolar stars again. Now if you look to the west, up Railroad Creek, the sky tonight looks like something like this. Here again you have the Big Dipper, and if you follow the curve of the Big Dipper you come to a very bright star which is called Arcturus. And that is a red giant that's found in the constellation of Bootes. We do look at the same kind of a configuration here where we draw the lines connecting the stars that lie in a constellation, we get something like this. Here again, the Little Dipper, the Big Dipper, and Arcturus, our Bootes. This is Corona Borealis. This is Leo, the Lion. Here's Leo Minor. This is Aquarius. And over here's Libra. And this is the constellation of Canes Venatici, and this is Coma Berenices. And the lines drawn in. If you follow this handle around again, as I said, you come to Arcturus and go a bit further and you come to this star, which is Spica, and over here is a star called the Nebula. They make a very nice triangle in the sky. It doesn't show up so well here, but in the night sky earlier in the year, you would be able to pick out that triangle very easily. It's a nice trio of stars to remember. Now if you look south from Holden, the sky looks approximately like this, except we've got some mountains here that cover up this particular constellation. This again is Bootes, or Arcturus, and Bootes, a kite-shaped constellation. And here is Corona Borealis with a nice bright star Gemma. This is a constellation Hercules. Might as well put in the lines here. Hercules, and here is Vega, Cygnus, the Northern Cross. This is Ophiuchus, and this is a serpent called the constellation Serpent that runs through the, this line runs through the constellation of Ophiuchus. And we'll come back to some of these and look at them more closely later on. Again, the lines that outline the constellations. Then looking westward, we see now the Northern Cross or Cygnus lying on its side. This is the star Vega, which is the fifth brightest star in the heavens, and this is star Altair in the constellation Aquila, the eagle. So again, this is Cygnus, the Northern Cross, Lyra, Hercules now on its side, Ophiuchus, so. Well, I realize you, if you're unfamiliar with these, I have. This is very much like a jumble. But now let's take a look at some of the individual constellations and go back to the Little Dipper again. Here again is Polaris. Polaris is a double star. If you have a telescope and train it on Polaris, you'll see that it really is two stars and not just one. It's interesting that well over half of all the stars in the sky are double or multiple stars. When we look at the sky, we see what appear to be single individual stars. But those stars, like our sun, are in the minority. Most stars are, when examined closely, turn out to be multiple. Now, there are different kinds of multiple stars. In some instances, two stars just look like they're close together, but maybe many, many light years apart. They're just more or less in line with each other, so that when we look in the direction of one, the other appears to be close to it. Those are called optical doubles, optical doubles. Then there are those stars that are actually a single system and rotate about each other. Those are true binaries, or physical binaries. And it's the physical binaries, of course, that are of interest to astronomers because they, as I said, form a single system that where the stars revolve about a common center. And you'll have instances where there are three and four, five stars all revolving about in a systematic sort of way around a with respect to each other. This is the this marks the North Celestial Pole. You'll notice that the North Star or Polaris is not precisely at the North Pole. You may know that our Earth spins like a top, and if you recall the tops you played with as a toy, you realize when you first got them going, they would stand up pretty straight, but after a while they would start to move around like this. They precess, as we say. And that means that that Polaris, the North Star, which marks a point in the heavens, or rather the North, not Polaris, but rather this point, the North Celestial Pole, marks that point where the axis of the Earth intersects the imaginary sphere of the heavens. And as the Earth precesses, moves about, that point moves. And over a period of 28,000 years, that point will make a complete circle. By the year about 2020, I think it is, this point will be even closer to Polaris. But then you wait for 14,000 years, and the North Celestial Pole will have moved around a circle, and will be down here near the star Vega. Vega is a very bright blue star, prominent in our skies at night. It's the fifth largest star in the heavens. Okay, that's the Little Dipper. This is the Big Dipper, and these are the two pointer stars, Dubie and Merrick, that point to the North Star or Polaris up here someplace. This is a rather interesting star, the second star in the handle of the Big Dipper. It looks again like a single star, but if you look at it closely, and you have good eyesight, then you'll see that there is a second star very close to Mizar. It's called Alcor. And the ancient Greek army would use this star as a test of soldiers' eyesight. If a soldier could separate those two stars, he had good eyes. And the Indians did the same, North American Indians. They would, their braves, if they had good eyesight, were able to separate those two stars. So when you go out and look around and look at the North Dipper tonight or some other night, take a look at this second star and see if you can pick out or see that it is really two stars. Now, that's not all. Actually, Mizar, actually this consists of three stars, because this star Mizar is itself a double star. Alcor isn't marked here, it lies a little bit above and to the left of Mizar. But Mizar itself is a double star, but not one you can separate with your naked eye.
So those three are actually three stars together? It's not that they're just in the same line of sight?
Mizar and the one that you can't separate from in our single system, but Alcor is separate.
I see.
So it's an optical double in that respect.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mizar and its companion are sometimes called the horse and rider. Now, lying down here is what's designated as M51. You'll see a lot of M's here, M40, M109, M106, M63. There was a French astronomer whose name was Charles Messier, and he was known in his day as the Comet Ferret, because he was so aggressive in trying to find comets. Well, there were a number of things in the heavens that were sort of fuzzy and looked like comets to him, but turned out to be no comets. And so he drew up a catalog of these fuzzy objects that he wanted to avoid. And his list has been became a very well-known, famous catalog, the Messier catalog, and a popular collection of fuzzy things in the heavens that amateur astronomers like to look at. Well, most of these are galaxies or nebula of some kind. They're all items that, to Messier at least, were not identifiable. This is a very well-known spiral galaxy. And it's called the Whirlpool Galaxy, M51. It was the first galaxy discovered which had the spiral configuration. Since that time, many others have been found that are also spiral in form, but this one was the first to be discovered. This is a companion galaxy nearby.
Do you happen to know how big a telescope took that picture?
It would be a good size one, but I it's probably on the slide, but I don't know offhand which one.
If you had a 6-inch reflecting telescope, could you, pick out a thing?
I don't think mine would do it. No, I have an 8-inch, and I'd probably get a fuzzy disk. I don't think I'd get the spiral arms in there. Probably you'd need a 10 or 12-inch telescope to get that. But I think this was taken professionally by one of the large telescopes. Okay, this is another section of the sky that's not far away. The handle of the Big Dipper is up here, and directly below it, remember the curve of the handle of the Big Dipper points to, leads us to Arcturus, the bright red giant, and here is Spica that I mentioned earlier, and here is Denebola. That nice trio of stars in the sky. This is the constellation Canis Venatici, or the hunting dogs, and this is Coma Berenices. And this realm, this part of the sky, directly underneath the Big Dipper's handle, is known as the realm of the galaxies. And all of these little purple dots are galaxies. Altogether, there are well over 1,000 galaxies in that part of the sky. And if you had a large telescope to see those, it would be a very spectacular sight. The constellation Coma Berenices means the hair of Berenice. Constellation is of some interest because the people who are referred to in the story were actual people. Ptolemy III was a ruler of Egypt about 250 BC, and Berenice was his wife. She was known for her long, beautiful tresses. The Assyrians had murdered the sister of Ptolemy, and he set out to make battle with the Assyrians. In revenge. And his wife said that if he were victorious, she would present her beautiful hair to the goddess, goddess of beauty, as Ariadne. Hmm? And Ptolemy came back victorious, and Berenices cut off her beautiful locks and placed them on the altar, and the next morning they were gone. Well, this was a scandal, of course. What to do? Kill the priests or or what? Well, the astronomer had a good solution. He said, this is what happened. The goddess was so pleased with this gift of your tresses that she took them to heaven with her and displayed them there. So it's hard to imagine that looking like beautiful tresses, but anyway, if you have a wild enough imagination, you might succeed at that. Okay, this is another one of the spiral galaxies, or at least a galaxy that's in this region of the sky. Look. At edge on, but it gives us a good idea of what a typical galaxy looks like. Our own galaxy is very likely of similar shape. It's been said that a galaxy is like two saucers placed together with a kind of a bulge in the middle, and you see that here, a thin saucer shape with a very intense bright center. Again, we're looking at this on edge. If we flipped it a quarter of a turn, you can see it from the side, or could see it from the other direction, it too might be a spiral. I'm not sure how it appears from the other direction. Now, if you come up, we're swinging from Polaris around through the west, and then coming across the southern sky and moving toward the eastern sky. This is again the star Arcturus and the constellation Bootes. Bootes is the herdsman, and presumably the herdsman was using the dogs of Caenis Venatici, the hunting dogs, to chase the bears around the pole. This is a star Alpheca, or otherwise called Gemma. These are very easy to distinguish in the sky at night. So if you go out this evening, some other evening, look for this kite-shaped constellation, Bootes, and then next to it, the little cup-shaped northern crown, Alpheca. And then moving still further to the left, we come to the constellation of Hercules. People sometimes have a hard time seeing this one. I say it looks like a distorted H, but quite distorted. You've got three stars here, more or less in line, but on the other side, the three are in a curved pattern. But you remove this line up here, then it looks a bit like an H. This part of Hercules is called the Keystone. Those of you who are familiar with doorway construction or archway construction know that when you cut the stone out the top, it has a shape like that, so it's called a keystone. Now this is one of those Messier objects, M13, and that is a globular cluster. If you can pick out this configuration of stars in the sky at night and just look at the right side of this distorted H, go about two-thirds of the way from this star up toward this one, and you'll see a little fuzzy spot. If you've got good eyesight, you can pick it out without a telescope or binoculars. With binoculars, certainly you can pick it out. See this little blurry spot in the sky.
When you say binoculars, do you mean just any kind of binoculars, or do you have to have astronomy binoculars?
Oh, any kind will really help a lot. But if you've got, let's say, 750s, 7 power and 50 millimeter objective lens on them, they're very good. The larger your objective lens, the better. The people who track comets will use a 10, 20 power binoculars with big objective lenses, but ordinary binoculars will do just fine to pick out something like this. Now this is a picture of M13, and it's a very spectacular sight to see in the telescope, I think. Very beautiful, really lovely. You can see why it's called a globular cluster. That describes exactly what you have here. It's a very dense collection of stars. And when I say dense, I don't mean that the stars are just a few miles apart. They're still a long way apart from each other. But relatively, these stars are concentrated densely in a fairly limited area of the sky. This one is 23,000 light years away and contains approximately 300,000 stars.
Is this a galaxy?
No, it's a globular cluster. It's not a galaxy. It's just a collection of stars. So it's far too small to be a galaxy.
Was it the product of an explosion sometime?
They're all held together by a gravitational force. And they're, for the most part, older stars. And astronomers know that it's a collection of older stars because they find no evidence of interstellar dust or gas in that cluster. Presumably, the stars have been there a long time and have absorbed or drawn to themselves all of the interstellar dust. And that means the stars are well along their way toward maturity. So they're old stars, generally, in a space that's pretty much devoid of any kind of other material.
Bill, around each of those stars, there's planets just like Earths?
No, there's no such a statement. There might be in some instance, but no, there's no evidence for that. Certainly they could be. Yeah, we, it'd be nice to find such a situation somewhere, but that's not at all the case with the globular clusters.
What generates the bright light in the greenish?
Here in the center?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just the concentration of the stars in the center. Only a few of the stars were picked up by the telescope sufficiently well to so we could see them as separate stars. But behind these outer stars, which are rather far apart, and of course the stars in here that you see are near the periphery of the sphere, they're just in front. But behind these is an even more dense concentration of stars. It's just like a glowing ball. They're so packed in there, and so thick.
How does the physics of this work? I mean, when you think of a galaxy, the spirals and so forth, you can almost see the gravitational, you know,
uh-huh.
action. And
yeah.
Here in this cluster, you see it looks random. How is it staying together?
They're all in motion, and they're moving with respect to each other, just as two planets or planets might move around the sun. But there's a very delicate balance there, obviously. They'd be of some kind, I suppose. But they are moving sufficiently so that they don't all come into the center and collide into a single mass, which they would do if they were stationary. Then gravity would just pull them into a single mass in the center. But they're moving sufficiently around a center so that the force of their motion keeps them.
It seems so random. You know, you
yes.
think a galaxy, you see the
yeah.
spiral, and you can
yeah.
kind of see how it wants to pull itself
yeah.
together. This
yeah.
doesn't appear like that at all.
No, that's right. That's right. No, I don't know what caused them to come into being, or why they took that form. I'm not sure why that's the case. But they are an interesting phenomenon. And there are many of these in around our galaxy. As I mentioned, our galaxy is again like two saucers that you might put together. And you recall the rather bright center for the galaxy that we showed before? Well, in our own galaxy, the Milky Way, these globular clusters are located in a sphere that more or less encloses the center of our own galaxy. And they're all quite far away. I said this is 23,000 light years away. Our own galaxy is about 20,000 light years thick in the middle, and these are in a sphere that encloses that bright center of our galaxy. The work that these were first studied extensively by an American astronomer, Harlow Shapley, who found in these clusters certain stars which are called Cepheid variables, and they're pulsating stars. They pulsate back and forth, get brighter, dimmer, generally over a relatively short time. Some have periods as short as 3 or 4 days, and others 70 days, 80 days, but hardly longer. And it turned out that these stars, for these stars, there's a relationship between the period and the intrinsic brightness. So if you measure the period with which the star's light oscillates, you can read off from a chart the intrinsic brightness of that star. The longer the period, the brighter the star. So if you find one of these pulsating stars in some distant part of our own galaxy, you measure its rate of pulsation, and then you know its intrinsic brightness, and then you measure its apparent brightness, and from that you can find its distance. So they're very useful devices for determining distances. And Shapley found that all of these clusters were situated then around the center of our galaxy, a kind of a sphere around the center. Now, the next constellation is Lyra, and that means lyre, the musical instrument. This is, again, the star Vega. If you go out tonight and look, well, almost straight up, let's say at 10 or 11 o'clock, you'll see a very nice, bright blue star. That's the star Vega. And I think that Karen Strum in her little book here says it knocks your eyes out. Blue star, blue stars are hot stars. All stars that have been studied and classified according to a scheme that tells us roughly what their temperature is. And a bright blue star like this probably has a temperature of 30 or 40,000 degrees Kelvin. This is the fifth largest or brightest star in the sky, the brightest star being Sirius, and Sirius is a winter star. We can't see that in the summer sky. And after Sirius comes star Canopus, which is far south, and again not visible from here, I'm quite sure. And then Alpha Centauri, which is the nearest star. And then the fourth largest star is Arcturus, the one we saw a moment ago. Then the fifth largest is Vega. Now, the defining shape in this constellation is this parallelogram. It's a very neat, very well-proportioned parallelogram. It's not large in the sky, but if you find Vega, you can find the parallelogram very easily. And this particular star here is called Epsilon Lyra, and it is famous because it's a double-double. In a telescope, you see immediately two stars, and if you look closely, you might see that each one of those is in turn a double star. So you've got these two stars here, and then each of those is again a double star. It's rather hard to separate the last pairs, but if you look very, very closely, you can probably separate them. Then this is a much studied star here. It is a double star, but the two stars involved are so close together that they have almost merged. The gases of the one tend to mix with the gases of the other. So it's and it rotates. The system rotates over a period of, I think, 40 or 50 days. And then here we have M57, which is a planetary nebula. Otherwise called the Ring Nebula. This is, as I said, a planetary nebula, and was named by William Herschel, a very eminent British astronomer who worked in the late 1700s. And when he looked at these at first, he thought that this and others like it looked like planets. So he called them planetary nebula. Well, there's nothing about planets, they have nothing to do with planets at all, but the name has stuck. You'll see in the center here a small but very intense star that's characteristic of all of the planetary nebula. These are the vestiges of stars in their last stages. A star goes through a period of development when it finally becomes a red giant, and then after that it may become a nova, explode, and then the next stage is that of a white dwarf and death of a star. When a star explodes, it spews out a great deal of gas and debris, and that's what we see here in this surrounding part. And then all that remains after the explosion is this bright small central star, and from there on it's the star goes on the way to eventually will vanish. Okay, this is the Northern Cross, and here again is Vega, or Vega's up here off the screen, and this is the Ring Nebula we just looked at. Deneb is an Arab word that means tail, and Albireo is also an Arab word that means a beak. So the swan, Cygnus, is flying southward along the Milky Way. Vulpecula means fox. Here is another planetary nebula, M27. And then off the screen up here is a very nice open cluster. Albireo is a double star, nice blue and gold. We can see that with a telescope easily. This is another planetary nebula, M57, the one that was, M27. We looked at M57, the Ring Nebula. M27 is the Dumbbell Nebula. And that again has the very bright, intense star, a small star at the center, and then the gaseous envelope that surrounds it, except in this case, the envelope is more intense on these opposing sides, so hence the name Dumbbell. I don't know that it looks much like a dumbbell, but that's what it's called. This is a kind of a classic example, too, of a planetary nebula. This is what's called an open cluster. Recall the globular cluster with the very intense center. This is a concentration of stars, but not necessarily in a nice globular pattern. Kind of a random collection, a very random collection of stars, but nonetheless, stars that are all influenced by each other gravitationally. So they, in a sense, form a system, but not like the globular clusters. And this is an open cluster you all know. Mentioned in the Old Testament. If you can count seven stars in it, you've got good eyesight. The Pleiades, yes. Mm-hmm. Right. An example of an open cluster. This is Ophiuchus, which is in the saddle for a good part of the evening now here at Holden. And the Northern Cross, or Cygnus, is up here. This is a nice double star here. Anybody here a physician? You're familiar with the symbol for the medical profession, the caduceus, which has the snakes entwined around it. Well, there's a relationship between this constellation and that particular symbol. Ophiuchus is the serpent gatherer. And here's serpent's cauda, the serpent's tail. And on the other side over here, off the screen, I guess, is a serpent's caput, a serpent's head. And Ophiuchus is often mentioned in Greek mythology as related to the medical profession. And I don't recall exactly the link there between the caduceus and this, but anyhow, there's a tie there somewhere. Now, if you would, we can't see this part of the sky yet, but in a month or so, then they will rise in the east, the constellation of Andromeda. This is part of a huge square called the Square of Pegasus, the horse, the flying horse. And this corner star, as well as the rest of these stars here, belong to Andromeda. And so if you find the square, move out along this line, and then go upward here, you'll find a collection of galaxies there. And the one large one is the Andromeda Galaxy, which is the only galaxy that is visible to us without the aid of a telescope. And it is a sister galaxy. It is thought to be about the same size as ours, same kind of configuration, both spiral galaxies. So this is the way our galaxy might look if we could step out of it and get 2.2 million light years away, because that's the distance of this galaxy, 2.2 million light years. The distance across the galaxy is about 100,000 light years. Again, the thickness, maybe 20,000 light years. This is a small companion galaxy, and likewise here.
That's our closest?
That's the closest galaxy, yes. Mm-hmm. And its distance was determined by Edwin Hubble, who made use of these Cepheid variable stars. He found one in this particular galaxy, measured its rate of pulsation, was able to determine that the galaxy was indeed 2.2 million light years away. So. That's a meteor streak across a section of the Milky Way. If you go out tonight, you'll see a nice, when it's clear, you'll see a nice stretch of the Milky Way across the sky. Cygnus, the Northern Cross, lies in the Milky Way. And if you follow that band of light from north to south, it will grow in intensity and seem to get brighter and brighter. And then behind Buckskin is this section of the Milky Way. We can't see the brightest section, but that is looking in the direction of the center of our own galaxy. Again, if you visualize the saucers and think of the Earth as being, or our own sun as being located about two-thirds the distance out from the center of that, then when you look back toward the center, you look through the greatest concentration of stars, and hence see the greatest brightness in the Milky Way. This is a view in that direction.
And their cloud is just interplanetary gases?
Yes, and there are both kinds of clouds here. Much of this is interstellar gas that's illuminated by neighboring stars. And this is dark dust that obscures the stars behind it. So what looks like it might be a hole, or you see through, is really not a hole, but instead is simply interstellar dust that obscures the light of bright stars behind it.